Life is short, so dig in deep and be swayed by Leah Love's erotic rhetoric.
Erotic Rhetoric with your host, Leah Love, on Jackalope Radio.
So I am here for you. Life is short, dig in deep, and be swayed by Leah Love's erotic rhetoric. Greetings, my cats and kittens. Welcome to Erotic Rhetoric. I am your host, Leah Love. We've got a great one tonight for you. So first, as you know, you can write me in the show at any time at leah.love.lust@gmail.com. And I give you that email because I really would like to hear from my listeners and my customers if they have any sexual issues, any letters they would like to read. They'll remain anonymous, but I'm accumulating them now, and I do have two or three on the docket for when we do a special viewer letters, or I should say listener letters. So I'm excited about that. But I've got a bunch of stuff to get to tonight. So first, we're going to take it to the streets. That's a segment that's going to be about funny things that happen at my Fantasia parties. And it just shows you how I'm able to do this job for so many years and enjoy it and make really good money, why I never get bored, why it's the longest job I've ever held, why it's really my favorite thing to do as a job, and I wish I could do it full-time. I wish I could do it forever until I'm 90. But probably my time is short and limited. So taking it to the streets tonight. So as I've mentioned before, I sell adult products and usually do it in the comfort of someone's home. Everyone's happy, comfortable, and sometimes, as you'll tell from the story, too comfortable and happy. But I digress. A couple of years ago, I did a party for a woman who has thrown many parties and invited me to do a presentation, a very loyal customer, and her very close group of friends. And they all work at a spa, like a higher-end spa salon. So it's always a great party for me. It's always cash-heavy. They're really sexually liberated, a lot of fun. So here's the deal. Basically, I start out my presentation with some kind of introduction about me, about the company. I'll play a icebreaker game where guests can win prizes and things like that. Then I usually launch into the first part of the show, which is like spa items, creams, lotions, lubrications, things like that. There is a short break so I can collect myself and reorganize my table. And then when we reconvene, I'll play another game and then we'll do the toys. Now, mind you, during this entire time, depending on the party, the women are usually drinking. Again, depending on the party. Sometimes I do a Sunday, you know, party at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and no one's getting, you know, slap happy. But in this case, they were drinking pretty heavily. I think it was a Sunday night. They're all off on Monday because the spa and the salon is closed. And luckily, they're all pretty happy and sexy drunks and not a bunch of sloppy broads. And they're all pretty hot and actually quite attractive, too. So I love all of these girls and they've known me for a long time. Anyway, one of the products we used to sell was called 52 Sexual Position Cards, and it was basically a deck. All the cards had a sexual position on it, drawn, not a photograph, but a drawing, and coupled with that was a tip and a hint on how to achieve the position with your partner. So I passed around a lot of stuff, and this deck made the rounds, but very slowly, I remember thinking. Looking back, I think they were probably studying at each and every position. And you can buy the deck, whatever. I don't even think we sell it anymore. So yada yada. The toys then get passed around. I take them out of my special toy box. And then after that, I'll play another game, blah, blah, blah. Start to take guest orders. So these girls are all very open. They all know each other very well. So I wasn't in another room taking orders, which is normally something I offer so that guests can place their orders in private, which is a really important part of what we do. People don't necessarily want to, like myself, talk out loud about their sexual proclivities or what they're interested in, or do they want the giant 10-inch butt plug, or do they just want the bullet, whatever. So hey. I usually... Oh, hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm fine.
So anyway, Todd, I love you for that. But yes, this is true. I like to keep things private because a lot of people don't need to know. Even some of their close friends don't need to know what they're ordering. However, in this instance, I was not in another room. I was out, you know, in the party, And I placed all the orders, and just about I'm packing up. I'm finished with the presentation, packing up all the orders, and I realized I left the deck of 52 positions out somewhere. So somebody must have grabbed it and was like studying it, and it was like left on the table or something. The next thing I know, each girl has a card, either one or two cards, and two girls at a time are taking turns in the middle of a circle of all the other girls watching, and the two girls in the circle are trying to navigate the most difficult sexual positions. Now, they're clothed, but they're drunk. And there are 52 cards, and some of the positions are doozies. For instance, the wheelbarrow. Todd, have you ever done the wheelbarrow as a sexual position?
I have no idea what the hell you're even talking about, but hey, that's okay.
I'm just going to explain it. Visualize a man holding the wheelbarrow handles, and those are the girl's legs.
Okay.
So this is a difficult position. First of all, you have to have a lot of upper arm strength. There has to be a really good kind of base wherever your foundation is. There has to be a good base in terms of where the girl's arms are, where the guy might be bracing himself. Anyway, difficult position. There's another one, I don't even remember what it's called, where the girl's knees are basically almost folded completely back. Her butt is up against him. Her hands are on the ground, but it's almost as if they're in the position of like a D. Very strange. Nearly impossible, okay? Have you ever heard of that one? I don't even know what it's called.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So are you a missionary position guy, just or not?
No.
I love that. That's awesome. So anyway, these girls are clothed, but they are bouncing and bumping and grinding their parts together and laughing hysterically. The positions are so complicated, they can't even get into them. They can't figure out how to maneuver their bodies to get the right angles. So naturally, they start using dining room chairs, ottomans, pillows, anything they could get their hands on in the room to get these positions down. So what am I doing? I think I'm literally holding my bag and staring in disbelief. This went on for such a long time. These girls were getting so into it. Of course, the alcohol helped. But what was obvious about what they were doing was they had very little lack of sexual inhibition, at least with each other. And not that they were in any way attracted to each other or having sex with each other, but they were close. You could tell they were good friends. They didn't judge each other. Very, very apparent. And I remember just staring open-mouthed for a long time, just being completely enraptured by these girls. And honestly, it did take every ounce of control for me to not jump into the action. Because, of course, they know me and they love me. And they're like, Leah Love, come and do this with us. You got to do the next one. Absolutely not. I'd have to try to maintain some type of professional demeanor in that instance because I'm the sexpert there. That's my job. But this is a perfect example of regretting actions in the morning. So that's why I also didn't do it. But I was reminded of this story today because this hostess just had a party for me a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't as eventful as that one, which was a couple of years ago, but still just as fun. And this is the type of situation that can happen at a Fantasia party. It's a great girls' night out. That was very unusual because it usually doesn't lapse into that. But this, for instance, this past week, I had a room full of 10 or so women, and they were quiet and like staring at me like I was reading from the Bible. And they were into it, and they bought stuff, but very quiet. So you never know what the personality of a whole party is or what, you know, how it's going to, it might start out quiet and get crazy. It might start out crazy and get quiet. But that's what keeps me doing this. I love every single minute of this. So, of course, if you are interested in having your own girls' night out or a couples' night out, which I have been known to do, you can contact me at leah.love.lust@gmail.com and also Leah Loves Lair, which is spelled LeahLoves LAIR.FantasiaHomeParties.com, and you can get more information from there about adult toy presentations or contact me directly. So now here's something, this will give you a little insight into me and how I talk a lot about how I got into this business and what my sexual proclivities are, or perhaps maybe, you know, a story about why I feel a certain way about a sex, you know, toy position, whatever. And this I'm going to call masturbation tales because I do come across women at these parties who have never masturbated. I'm a huge advocate of female masturbation. It's an important part of a woman's sex life. It strengthens her Kegel muscle, which is good for several things, including having a healthy vaginal birth. It's good for working toward orgasms, working your Kegel muscle. It helps women prevent incontinence as they get older. Because if you don't exercise your Kegel muscle, and you do that through orgasm, then you could very well be incontinent as you get older, which means you'll have to wear an adult diaper. So I'm always astounded when I come across somebody, a woman specifically, who hasn't masturbated. There's nothing wrong with it. If you're a woman and you haven't masturbated, or if you never thought about it, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but it is such a huge part of my life since I was very young. And I always wonder if there are other women out there who can hear my story and have a similar experience and think, you know, maybe I'm not alone in the world. So I always like to share my tales. And I do share these at parties, and very often people are like, oh, thank God, I'm not the only one. So I was about 10 or 11 when I first discovered masturbation. I think I somehow felt like a wisp of air on my privates. I don't know if I was getting undressed or if I was drying myself after a shower, but I just remember it felt really good. And I graduated to, I guess, just kind of lying there with my privates exposed to using the faucet in the tub. Now, mind you, oh, there comes my New York accent. The faucet. Hey, do you have any mustard? Sorry, guys. the faucet in the tub, very, very difficult thing to enjoy in my house as I grew up, because, one, we only had one bathroom, and this was for two adults, my parents, and three children, and two, we had no detachable shower wand. I didn't discover that lovely tool until a couple of years later at my parents' beach house, and that'll be a story for another day. But the masturbating in the tub, I was, I think, 10 or 11, it required me to lay flat on my back in the bathtub with my legs straight up, my privates facing the faucet, so that the water could hit me directly on my clitoris, right? At 11, this is. And oh, the delight of this feeling. I can remember it like it was yesterday, feeling that for the first time. So warm, so lovely, so rapturous, so... I mean, you're 11. You don't even really know what sex is. You don't know what it's like to feel, you know, anything. You're completely naive. All you know is that it feels amazing and wonderful. So I was using a steady stream of water, and sometimes my fingers, those were my go-to techniques until I was about 16. But here's the thing. I'm almost afraid to tell this story because although I do have a big mouth with my family and friends, I'm never sure of who I actually tell certain stories too. Like, I know for sure I never told this story to my sister. I don't even think I told this story to my best friend, Kim, who hopefully will be joining me occasionally on the show for a specific topic here or there. So at 16, I was either 16 or 17, my sister and I were visiting my aunts, uncles, and cousins down in North and South Carolina with my Nana. This is my father's mother. Now, my Nana's sister, Grace, we called her Aunt Sissy. She was a delight, just a beautiful, happy person. And she lived in South Carolina with her husband, who was whose name was Tom, and we called him Uncle Happy, also a delight. And Happy apparently was a sarcastic nickname when he was younger. But when I knew him and he was gray-haired and walked with a cane, he absolutely was so happy and such a wonderful uncle. But we stayed with them for a couple of nights. Now, I have always been kind of a nosy, a scrapper, as it were, meaning that I would peruse my host's drawers, cabinets, underneath their sinks, their bedroom drawers, underwear drawers, whatever, to see what they were up to, find things, see what kind of crazy underwear they were wearing, things I never heard of, sexy books, and, you know, maybe occasionally, quote-unquote, borrow something. Anyway, I was digging around in Aunt Sissy's bathroom cabinet under the sink in the bathroom, and I came across this vibrating facial scrubber, and it literally looked like an electric shaver that you could hold in your hands, and on the end was kind of a nub, and that nub vibrated, and it had different attachments. And you would put, it had like a scrub attachment, it had a smooth attachment for like putting on, facial moisturizer. somehow, I mean, honestly, to say this went right from my cabinet, right from the cabinet to my clitoris is a little bit of an exaggeration. I don't know how I connected that this little wonderful vibration pod would feel great up against my skin, but somehow I did figure it out. I remember plugging it in and turned it on. I was in the bathroom with the door locked. And then in my mind, I put it up against my face, but then my mind kind of went, and I put it right on my crotch with my clothes on, and I had an orgasm right there in the bathroom of my sweet little Aunt Sissy's, you know, vacation house. With, by the way, my cousin and my sister were probably in the other room chatting it up with Aunt Sissy and my uncle somewhere else in the house. But for this, this was something. I remember thinking, this is something. And at that point, I never really had a serious boyfriend. I made out with a few people, but I had sex very, very late in life. So this discovery of this vibrating thing on my clitoris, I used that thing so often for the next 2 years and reaped such ecstasy from it. I don't even know if I could think straight for much of high school. I do know that I was a regular pot smoker, and this was one of my routines. I would smoke a joint or a half a joint, masturbate, and then journal about it. And my self sessions were so intense. I was high, I was masturbating. This is like 17 years old, 18 years old. I wanted to remember them. So I wanted to refer back to them. So I would code my journal entries with a little M in a circle so I would know that that was an extremely fantastic masturbation session for myself. So that's how the intensity of my I guess you should say, sexuality, I should say, kind of came into play. But you know what? As all things do, my little massager didn't last forever. It burned out, I think, in about 2 years. And I always felt guilty, too, because I was never sure if anyone knew I had taken it. And Sissy never said anything. She died of cancer, I think, like 10 years later. I cried my eyes out because she was so sweet. But no one ever asked me, you know, about it. There was no, like, I don't, like, nobody ever said, what happened to that thing I had in the cabinet? I was never sure if anybody could hear that little motor whirring late at night in my house. Oh, and I cried when that thing burned out for days. I think days I cried. So, and you know what? I never had another motorized toy or a vibrator, as it would be called, until my late 20s. I never gave it another thought. I just used my fingers or found things to act as dildos because I was chubby and not confident. I was shy about sex with others, and, you know, basically my clitoris had a good 10 years of some peace, which, of course, is not the case now. Anyway, Todd, are you still there, Todd?
I'm here.
I didn't hear you yelping.
I think I ran screaming from the room twice, but I had my volume down.
Oh, okay, good. You ran screaming from the room. I forgot. You can do that. And we also could cleanse your palate tonight. Can I just say Star Wars and your palate's cleansed?
Yeah, because it starts in just a little over a week.
Oh, okay, good. See? All right, good. Star Wars in 3D.
Yay.
But anyway, speaking of masturbatory fodder, and that is another topic for another time perhaps or another show, I want to try a new segment called Sexy TV Show of the Week. Now, I am a huge pop culture whore anyway, and one of my favorite indulgences is TV. So, naturally, I feel like it should have a place on my show in some form. I do watch a lot of trashy, just awful reality TV, Survivor and American Idol, all that stuff. And I don't think that those are especially sexy, but there's like that kind of train wreck quality to them that I can't pull myself away from. And there could be a week where there's nothing sexy on TV, which is totally viable. So I can't vouch that this will be a regular feature, but we'll see. The reason that I even thought of doing this is because the thought of this show that I'm about to talk about literally has me moist for various reasons. The show is Sons of Anarchy, which is on the FX network. Catch up on Netflix. Catch up any way you can. Season 5, I think, is filming now and will premiere in September, and I'm trying to get the word out about this show. It is damn sexy. It's got gore and violence, but I think it gets gypped at award shows. So, oh, and Katie Seagal's in it, and she's the motorcycle mama matriarch, and her character, Gemma Teller, she'll blow Peg Bundy right out of your friggin' head. Watch that show. It's excellent. So, Sons of Anarchy. Check
it
out. There you go. And Todd watches it. So there's another stamp of approval. The nerd stamp of approval. Is that okay to call you a nerd?
Yeah, well, the shoe does fit.
Is that the right word, though? Because sometimes my my trusty in-house producer, Adrian Sterning, will school me on the difference between geek and nerd, because sometimes I say geek.
Yeah, there's, you know, a lot of people have different definitions of that. I've always thought nerd was appropriate.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. So nerd it is. And it's, I don't even mean that in a bad way. There's just a certain kind of culture out there, and when I say nerd, people know what I'm talking about, correct?
Yes.
All right, cool.
We hope they do.
Excellent. So now, here's another thing about me. You probably can guess that I have a collection of sex books in my house. I also used to work for a publisher, so I was able to collect a lot through that. And a lot of these books have a lot of really, like, really good information in them. Sometimes, you know, reading the whole book isn't necessary. You could just kind of skim it. But I, you know, I have general books about sex from sex toys, the history of sex, sex in art, lesbian, gay, short story fantasies, sex in film, sex in pornography, et cetera, so forth. But there is this one little book of sexual observations by some guy named William Ashoka Ross. And I honestly, I'm not exactly sure who he is. He offers no explanation in his introduction, except to mention that he dedicates his book, which is called The Wonderful Little Sex Book, and he dedicates it to all of his lovers, his mentors, guides, and students everywhere. But in his introduction, he doesn't talk about, is he to what students? Am I a student because I'm reading the book? Is he a professor somewhere? It says nothing. It affiliates him nowhere. There's no Wikipedia entry about him. I did a Google search when I know I wanted to talk about the book. Turned up nothing, except just his book, which is for sale apparently still. And this is from, I think, the 90s. But I've been referring to this book for years. And here's just an example of some of the wisdom that he has, and I'm going to share it. And I'm going to share a couple of pieces of this wisdom. And I know that the book is available online, so definitely check it out if you like what he has to say. And this is very interesting. I marked off a few of the passages, and it's not a book like a regular book. Every page is an observation about sex in some form. There are no chapters. It's literally like, I think, 282. And they're just, or 283, and it's just little excerpts. And here's one. Ejaculation isn't orgasm. There's a clear distinction, but being told about it may make some men angry. It's humiliating for them to think that they may never have experienced anything quite so rapturous. I love that word. Ejaculation is local. Orgasm is total. Ejaculation is only a fragment. Orgasm is the whole. In orgasm, the usual you disappears. In ejaculation, you remain present with your ego intact, and the difference is enormous. True orgasm comes from surrendering and melting and letting go and really opening up to your beloved. And you do that by admitting that up to now you've been putting up a barrier. So that's just one of his observations. And that's, I don't want to say that that one's necessarily negative, because I don't necessarily think that would make men angry. If I was a guy, I think I'd be like, what? I would want to think about that. Todd, you're a guy, right?
Last time I checked.
So what do you think about the difference between ejaculation and orgasm? Meaning that ejaculation is local, meaning that it's a physical response, but that orgasm is your total body.
I think it makes sense.
Short and sweet. Excellent. And you're not angry, are you?
No, I'm not angry. I figured that crap out when I was 18.
See? All right, good. But I've got news for you. A lot of men can't figure this out. I come in contact with a lot of women, and they talk to me about their partner, their lover, their boyfriends, their husbands, whatever. And a lot of it is that kind of frustration where the women want to feel like this kind of all-over sensation during sex. Sometimes, doesn't have to be all the time. Sometimes it could be just quick and loud and dirty and nasty, and you can move on. But, you know, some men don't really get a lot of stuff, but I think that's that is an important observation.
Dudes are Neanderthal-like sometimes, too. I mean, they're like, ugh, we play football, we have Taco Bell.
Exactly. It's everything's a function. It's like having sex is a function, eating is a function, everything is just a function.
Yeah.
So I think this guy tries to kind of bridge that gap in a lot of ways.
Tries to make it all better.
Exactly. Well, I don't want to say all better, because then that kind of puts this kind of pressure, I think. to make everything all better. But he just gives you stuff to think about, and that perhaps you can just work it into your head, and the next time that you're going to have sex with your partner or with anybody, you know, maybe you'll have a little bit of a revelation.
There you go.
I'm going to read one more thing. This is a good one. Don't think of your lover as doing something to you. Think of your lover as doing something with you. When someone does something to you, the tendency is to gossip about it. Not only that, but you're not really there. When someone does something with you, it's a shared event, a sacred memento, a little secret you cherish forever that's just between the two of you. It's a very different experience. What makes the difference is your totality, how much you decide to participate. Once you see that holding back really doesn't do much for you, my guess is you'll decide to jump into it very quickly. So basically, I think the first two sentences are the most important. Don't think of your lover as doing something to you. Think of your lover as doing something with you. And I think that is one of the chief things that men and some women forget. It's all about them. It's all about kind of being selfish and what is this person doing for you rather than you focusing on somebody else. And as I mentioned that, I'm just going to mark off these passages in the book so I know I talked about them before. The advice that I give young men who might come to me from time to time, I do have a young cousin who I've actually two cousins, and one is my best friend, but I also have a younger cousin who came to me once to basically ask me some advice. And what I said to him was, here's the bottom line. If you focus on your partner's pleasure, you will orgasm by default, especially at that age. So don't think of it as, what is this? Oh, do I hear feedback? Oh, I feel like I hear feedback, Todd. That was weird. Anyway.
That was a Skype issue. Thanks, Skype.
Oh, thank you, Skype. Oh, have I mentioned Todd's in Kansas? Anyway. So, anyway, my cousin came to me the advice I gave him was, I thought, pretty simple. And to this day, I know that he has used that advice and he knew that I was right. So he focuses completely on his female partner's pleasure, and he basically has an orgasm by default because he gets pleasure from pleasuring her rather than thinking that she is there to pleasure him and she has to work for his orgasm. And that's how he's thinking about it. He thinks about it in the exact opposite way, and he said he's never been happier. So there you go. A little bit of wisdom for today. Todd, I have something I think you're going to like.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to want to run screaming from the room.
I might.
Okay, well, we'll leave that for a little bit later. But, I like to do my lists, and I like to do lists that have to do with sex and movies and sex and music and everything else. And my in-house producer, Adrian Sterling, dug up some great stuff about what I turned into the top 10 rock and roll sex legends or sexually related legends. Because if they were just sex, I probably would have to shorten the list. But if they're sexually related, meaning that they have to do with the body part that has to do with sex, you know, of someone in rock and roll or something like that. So I have a top 10 list, top 10 rock and roll sex legends or sexually related legends. And excuse me, I feel a little bit stuffed up because I was sick. So I might have to blow my nose, but hopefully that won't happen. So, number 10. The legend is Guns N' Roses' Rocket Queen on Appetite for Destruction features the moans of a woman having sex with a member of the band. Todd, do you think this is true or false?
False.
True. You ever listen to that album?
Yeah.
Rocket Queen, the moaning?
I figured it was fake.
That was a woman named Adriana Smith. She was, I believe, a stripper in California. And she was at the time, the drummer was Steven Adler. She was his girlfriend. And even though Axl Rose was dating Erin Everly at the time of the recording of that album, Adriana came into the studio, and somehow her and Axl ended up having sex on the floor of the studio, and the recording of her moaning made it onto the finished copy of Appetite for Destruction.
Strange.
Pretty cool, right?
Strange.
Yeah, but if you listen to that song, like, to me, when did that come out? 1987? I knew when I heard that song. That sounded so real. I was like, something's going on there. Something's happening there. And my mind went to a whole bunch of tawdry places. I think I was 1988. I was, well, I don't want to give away my age. What am I doing? Anyway. So, number 9. David Lee Roth is actually gay. True or false?
False.
That is correct. He has been, I believe, asked. Do people come right out and ask Tom Cruise if he's gay? I don't know. But apparently, they come right out, because that's also a big Hollywood legend. But they do, apparently, will grill David Lee Roth if he's gay. And by the way, if somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, Leah Love, are you gay?" I'd be like, "What's it to you?" But David Lee Roth comes out and says, "Of course I'm not gay, because don't you think if I was gay that I'd want men to choke on my big penis?"
Which we all know is false, because we've seen the videos.
Well, you don't know. He could be a grower, not a shower.
God, I'm telling you what, he showed it in the camera enough.
Yeah, that's true. He did. And he wears all that tight spandex and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, but you know what? Like I said, who knows? He's filming those videos. He might not, have the whole enchilada going.
Did you notice my response?
Okay, so number 8, Gene Simmons had a cow tongue surgically implanted in his mouth.
False.
That is correct. You are correct, Todd. He did not have a cow surgically implanted. It just looks that way. That is his natural tongue. And by the way, we all know Gene Simmons has no vices, right? He doesn't do drugs, he doesn't drink, sex is his vice.
That's it, yeah.
Isn't that, to me, that is just insane that he ended up with that tongue. And obviously we know what he's doing with the tongue.
Talking?
Right, yeah. That's what every word that comes out of his mouth these days, I believe, is BS. Talking. Here's the thing, though. He is, let's just face facts, he's not a good-looking guy, right?
Makeup, he's fine.
That's right. I agree with that. However, reportedly, he has a special skill with that tongue, correct? So we'll say he goes down on women pretty well, and he's pretty renowned for that. They also say about a man who has that skill is compensating in another area, which I'm not saying is necessarily bad, but he maybe isn't that well endowed. And the tongue,
I don't think that's true either.
You don't think that that's true? I don't know for sure. I'm just saying.
I think that's dookie, because sometimes you just take pride in being able to do the alphabet and write a letter to Jane.
Wait, isn't that the high school trick? Isn't that how you learned how to do it?
No, man. I learned by watching Sam Kinison.
Yes, that's
And by reading science books.
Oh, you got to give that one up. What do you mean about reading science books?
Well, because when you're a nerd, no one really talks to you about the stuff. You got to figure out what to do. So you get a girl and you're thinking, okay, I don't want her to think I suck. So what am I going to do? I'm going to learn all about the female anatomy. So I got a science book about female anatomy, and I figured out where the nerve endings were. And then I figured out, okay, this nerve ending is here, this nerve ending is here, this nerve ending. Then I figured out which ones were the most sensitive, which ones were you didn't want to hit too much because they were too sensitive, and the others were perfect. And that's all in the science manual.
And yet, Todd, you very often claim that you're going to run out of the room when I'm talking, when I'm going into detail about sex.
It was nerdish.
That is, I'll give you that. That is definitely a kind of an end run around kind of not being a nerd.
Like, it's not like I'm reading the Kama Sutra.
Right. But here's the thing. Your nerdy ways are allowing you to become less of a nerd, because you're literally looking up how to please a woman. That is very impressive.
I don't know about that. I just didn't want to suck.
No, but, well, I don't know. I got to be honest. I'm going to take a poll. I'm going to take a poll at some point, whether it's my customer's husband or, just random men on the street. I don't care how I get this information. And I'm going to poll and see how much men actually did even a fifth of the research you did in order to not suck. Because I would be hard-pressed to find another man who claims to have done that much research. Seriously. Outside of, say, a legend, in the bedroom, like a porn star or something like that. But I'm very impressed right now. I have to take a little bit of a breather. You go, Todd. You go. Okay. So, number 7. Apparently, Stevie Nicks was rumored to be such a cocaine addict that she would blow cocaine up her rectum.
That's not true.
Well, we'll see. Apparently, she was obviously a coke addict and became so tolerant of it that, and it is biologically feasible that you could get high that way, because there are other things that have been done and said that you can do in that area in the same manner. But here's the thing. She publicly, we don't know for sure if this is true or false. It's a legend. She publicly denied it, but you could take that as proof either way. Like, let's face it. If somebody came to you and said, did you do this? Would you, like, go, no way? Like, or would you just be like, I can't, like, put your hand up and be like, I'm not even going to talk to you. Right? So she literally denied it. So, I don't know. That one's going to be left up to our imaginations, I suppose. And by the way, I saw Stevie Nicks in concert. I guess it was last September or August. She looks amazing. She's like 60-something, and she had on her, you know, beautiful outfit. Her voice sounded good, and she knew enough not to try to hit those same notes she was hitting back in the 70s and the early 80s. Unlike, say, you know, who's the lead singer of Def Leppard? Joe Elliott. When I saw him in concert a few years ago, he's still trying to hit those damn high notes, and he shouldn't.
Yeah, but look at Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden. He can not only hit them, he goes higher now.
Well, and so can Rob Halford, but here's the difference. We know they can. They can do it. They proved it in concert time and time again. I still get goose pimples when I see Rob Halford to this day live, because I do see him live, and he still hits those notes, and it's amazing. But some of those singers, whether they ever could hit those notes, who knows? Stevie Nicks could hit those notes. I've heard her sing live. And even now, though, many, many, many years later, she can still hit those notes and proves it again and again. So pretty awesome, I think.
I got to meet Stevie a couple times, and one time she was dancing around in her ballet shoes. She used to wear these toe shoes and do these moves backstage to get ready, kind of get herself ready for the show. I don't know why, because she didn't move that much once she got on stage. She moved a little, but not like that, right? But she used to psych herself up with this thing, so... I knew someone that was one of the nation's leading floral designers. They'd made her this amazing bouquet, and they took it down to her, and I got to meet Stevie. And I'm so excited to say she was such a nice person. She gave me her toe shoes and signed them.
What?
Yep, yep.
So did you see her blow any cocaine up her rectum?
No, I did not. And she seemed like the kind of person that probably wouldn't do that, so.
Oh, okay. Well, then, well, there we have. We have a little bit of a testimonial. Todd, that's really cool. Do you still have those shoes?
I do.
You know, good for you. I'm glad you didn't, like, auction them off on eBay or something.
Oh, no, and I even, I was such a nut as a kid. I followed Iron Maiden all over the place, and we went down to Texas, and we ended up staying in the same hotel. And I had met him here in Kansas City at a barbecue place, they remembered me. So they gave me a tapestry with Eddie killing Margaret Thatcher, the other Iron Maiden, as you know.
Yes.
Their mascot, Eddie, was taking her out on this great big tapestry. They gave me that. And, of course, I was one of the first 100 people in America in their fan club. So I didn't think nothing of it. They said, well, be expecting something. We're getting ready to send something to all of our fans. I didn't think nothing of it. Sure enough, about 2 months later, I get this package in the mail. It's from Iron Maiden. It's called Made in England. It's an album. One side of it has songs. The other side is plain, untouched vinyl. And they've all taken a vinyl inscriber and inscribed their names into it.
Wow. Signatures.
Greatest guys in the world.
You know, I'm really glad that you feel free and you talk about all of this stuff, because the more I learn about you, the more, like, I feel like I'm just tucking away for later knowledge.
Scary stuff, right?
That's awesome. Seriously, that's really, really cool. And that's, I know a few Iron Maiden freaks that, and my brother being one of them, that is really super, super cool. And I've seen them live recently, too. You know, I didn't go to a lot of concerts when I was a teenager or even in my 20s. I was, you know, in school and I was working. I didn't have money, whatever. And it was when I started working, like in my late 20s and my 30s, where thankfully these bands were still touring. So I did get a chance to go see them, including the band at our number 6 legend, Kiss. Now, the legend here is...
But shouldn't Gene Simmons be with Kiss, maybe?
No, this is totally a separate thing. The legend is that they had this kind of ridiculous claim that they mixed vials of their own blood into the ink used on their Kiss comic book series.
It actually did happen, yes.
Yes, and you knew, I figured you would knew that. Yeah. This absolutely happened. They apparently were on tour, and they dumped vials of blood into the ink vat. So, and they have a picture of it happening.
Yeah, they had film. They shot it on, like, 16 millimeter film, even.
Yeah, they documented it in a variety of different ways. Notary Republic signed a contract. So you can rest assured that if you see someone is licking a Kiss comic, they very well could get some kind of a communicable disease.
Or they're vampires.
Or they're... okay, number five.
Hard-up vampires.
Hard-up vampires.
Kind of like the kind that twinkle.
Oh my god, that thing. You mean like Edward? Are you thinking of Twilight? You should be ashamed of yourself. Now, see... Now I need a moment of silence. I can't take it. I just want to tell you, I've seen three out of those four movies.
I'm sorry.
No, this is a good story. I'm just going to share this before we get to number five, because I don't know if my nephew... I have two nephews. One's 17, one's 18. The 18-year-old I'll share, you know, stories with from time to time, because he's old enough. He's in college. He's going to be 19 in a few weeks. He's really cool, laid-back kid. He's awesome. But back when the first one came out, and we didn't really know, I didn't know how awful the books were, because they're horrible, and I didn't also know at that time how awful the movies were, but I said to the two of them, I said, listen, we're going to go see this movie Twilight. And they were like, what? Why? I said, trust your Auntie Leah. So we go to the movie, the weekend it opens, and the following week, you know, they were in high school. I think at the time when that came out, maybe one was a sophomore, one was a junior, they go into school, and that week, whatever, whatever. Now, mind you, guess who else went to go see that movie that weekend? Every single girl at their high school. So they were like the stars of school that week. They were almost the only boys who went to see it. And it just came up in conversation. And one of them said to me, like, at the end of the week, they were like, thanks, Auntie Leah. Because they had things to talk about with these girls. So anyway, we went to see number two, which was awful. And by that time, I said, we don't need to go see any other one. So we didn't see number three. But then my neighbor dragged me to the most recent one, which, again, was awful. However, although my neighbor is a huge fan of the books and the movies, also has a good sense of humor about it and laughed at times in the movie where obviously you weren't expected to laugh. And there were definitely hardcore fans in the theater. But her and I were hooting and hollering during the honeymoon scene, the baby birth scene, hooting and hollering. So, that's my little Twilight story, you and your sparkly vampires, Todd.
Ugh.
Have you seen all of them? You've seen all of those movies, haven't you? By yourself.
Not even.
All right.
The first one my daughter drug me to, and I thought I was going to just not even make it out of the theater before I had to find a bucket.
Oh, you're a good daddy!
Of course, that's but I took her to see Justin Bieber live. I'll do anything for my kids.
Aw, yeah, I went to see the Miley Cyrus movie with my niece.
Yeah, I did that too.
Yeah, oh, see? Oh, Todd, I'm clutching my heart.
You'll do whatever you need for your kids.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so number five. See, now this is one that I don't ever remember hearing. Apparently Mick Jagger was caught during a drug bust eating a Mars bar from between the legs of Marianne Faithfull. And apparently at the same time was nude in bed with David Bowie. True or false?
You know, with those guys, it could be true.
Well, here's the thing. Apparently, the Mars bar is not true, but the Bowie banging may actually be true. They did bust in on Jagger and Faithfull for the drugs, but they didn't report any sexual activity. They did say that she was naked, except that she was covered by a blanket, so whatever. But Bowie's wife did detail her walking in on them on an episode of Joan Rivers' show. I think it wasn't even just Joan Rivers' radio show. I remember seeing video of this. I think it was Howard Stern, Bowie's ex-wife. I don't know if it was Sally Jesse or something like that, but she claimed later on they weren't having sex, just nude in bed, which, you know, really? Why were they just nude in bed? Is that normal behavior? I don't think so. So I'm gonna wager that one is probably true.
Yeah, I think so, because, I mean, let's be honest, they were nuts, they were the party animals of their day, and they knew what to do.
Exactly, and by the way, I think also there's a certain element of, like, kind of conquering both sexes when you get to that level of fame, or kind of maybe your sexual prowess, and you just get laid so much that you just figure, well, why the hell not? So who knows? Number four, Frank Zappa eats poo. True or false?
I've heard the rumor. I think it's false.
It is false. You're right. Fans totally claim that this happened and it didn't. And the reason that he did deny it, of course, but took a really funny spin on it. And he, despite the fact that his music is crazy and it appears that he, you know, was, you know, drugged most of the time, whatever, he was a huge anti-drug guy. And apparently his quote about that incident when asked about it was, he said, I never took a bleep on stage, and the closest I ever came to eating bleep anywhere was at a Holiday Inn buffet in Fayetteville, North Carolina. So he went out and denied this in a very cool way. So we could say that, number four, Frank Zappa did not eat poop. So number three, Marilyn Manson gets flexible. So the legend is he got ribs removed so that he could perform auto fellatio. True or false?
False.
Yes, we all pretty much know that. And it's number three because it was really just kind of a legend for so long. And I think there was even like there was a Tool album I seem to remember around that same time that had a visual where when you turned it under the light, you could see a person on the CD cover performing auto fellatio as well. So it was all around that time. But the thing is, apparently, whoever also further researched this, apparently, rib removal is not the best way to achieve this, but perhaps removing a vertebra. So there's a little tidbit for anybody interested in how that could or could not work. Number two is from when I was even a kid, I remember hearing this. Rod Stewart has a gallon of semen in his stomach.
Crap.
True or false? This was definitely false. However, apparently, Rod doesn't help the case with his denials. He has more than one occasion has said that it made him laugh. It never really hurt him. What could I have done? A fleet of sailors. I could have sucked them off, or a football team. In any case, we're going to accept that Stewart did deny this rumor because even a gallon. The rumor was an exact gallon. What can you drink a gallon of and not vomit? That's what I'd like to know. So there's no way that could have happened. So I'm going to say sounds good to me. And then number one was the Led Zeppelin Mud Shark legend, which was basically that they had a groupie in the room and they took a mud shark and they inserted it into vagina. True or false?
Gosh, I don't know. Maybe true?
It is actually part true. It wasn't a mud shark. And apparently, it was a road manager who caught some kind of a specific red snapper fish, and the groupie was a redhead. So there was this kind of lame-ass joke where, you know, they put the fish, you know, by her privates where she had her natural red hair, and that apparently only John Bonham was around, and, you know, he wasn't even interested in what was going on. So, you know how it's one of those things that, you know, somebody sees or hears about and it turns into this big thing. And then all of a sudden it's all four band members, you know, with one groupie shoving a mud shark in and out of her vagina. But no, that apparently is not true. But there is a version of it that is true. There was a fish by a vagina, but that's about it. So there you have it. That is the erotic rhetoric top 10 list for today. Rock and roll sex legends or sexually related legends. And thank you, Todd, for participating in that. That was pretty funny. So did you like that one?
That was good.
Yeah, see, I think those are really, really fun. So, so I'm going to do my Sex in the News segment. But I do have a special guest here, my in-house producer, Adrian Sterling. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello, Adrian.
Adrian, pull up a chair. So Adrian basically helps me produce my show. Every weekend he'll send me sex links that he finds on the web, and he's very, very good with tracking things down on the web. If I ask him for specific topics, he'll look those up. If there's something interesting in the recent news, he'll find those for me. So I asked him to sit in with me today because we do have a few pretty interesting ones, and hopefully he'll have some inspiring comments. So, Adrian, you ready for me?
Yeah.
How are you? Are you relaxed?
I would say so.
I did get some reports that people did enjoy your comments in my first show, and you decided that you didn't want to come back for the second one. So I think that you need to make sure that you recognize every week that you do, in fact, have fans and that they might, in fact, want to hear you on a weekly basis.
Oh, I'm busy, man.
I'll leave that up to you. Okay. So the first Sex in the News article actually was one of the first ones that you sent, and I just didn't get to. And it was called, it's about one of the former ministers of the Ministry of National Security in Trinidad is against allowing prisoners to have conjugal visits because he feels that that adds no value to prisoners or society. And I have to tell you, I disagree with this. So he's saying that prisoners, even if they're married, don't deserve conjugal visits because it adds nothing. And that they, it's not even that they shouldn't be rewarded. It's not even about that. Sex is a basic human need. Like, don't you think that if you were in jail that for a long period of time, that you would need to have to see and have that intimate time with your wife?
That's why I pitched the other team.
Oh, I forgot, Adrian, you pitched the other team, of course. What about a conjugal visit with your gay lover?
With all those guys in prison with you?
Oh, but you don't want it to be special? You just want it to be wham, bam, thank you, sir?
I'm not particular.
Well, that's apparent, Adrian. That is apparent. So, here we go. Rejecting. And I heartily disagree with this. So, I'm not a fan. I think all prisoners deserve to have sex if they have, especially if they have a long-term partner, whether they're gay or straight or married. So, moving right along, let's see here. Oh, this is an interesting one, but I might need to save this for another episode. This is signs that you are, in fact, a sex addict. So, maybe, let's see. I'm going to read some of the, what we're going to just touch upon. What are some of the signs? And then maybe I'll do some more research and we could turn this into like a segment on the show in terms of sex addiction and somehow maybe relate it to celebrities or
do you
movies.
Happen to know a sex addict?
Do I know a specific sex addict in real life or a celebrity?
In real life that you could have on the show to interview.
You know, I have a big circle of friends and I have a lot of weird crap going on. So I probably could dig one up, even if I don't know them right now. Nonetheless, David Duchovny is who immediately comes to mind, but I don't know him in person. But here's what they're saying. Obviously, you're leading a double life. So you're having one life with, you know, people where you're pretending not to be addicted to sex, and then you have this kind of totally other life where, like, you know, every waking hour you're out, you know, where you're not working or you're not doing something specific, you're hanging out at home like porn or surfing the web or seeing a mistress or another girlfriend or juggling multiple people. You frequently seek out sexual material. So that means, obviously, that what you might have, some small porn collection or a couple of magazines, isn't enough. You're constantly seeking out new sexual material. Also, what they're saying, number three, that you're a sex addict, is you're compromising your personal relationships. And I think that's the most significant one. Because if you're a sex addict and you love somebody, but you still can't help yourself from doing things that you know are going to hurt them, then that's a sex addict. You can't stop it. The same way that I'm addicted to food, let's say, or biting my nails. I know that I shouldn't bite my nails. This is not a titillating subject, but I shouldn't bite my nails, but I can't help it. So therefore, it's an addiction. So if you're doing something to kind of hurt yourself or the ones that you love, then that is how they define sex addict. So I'm going to save that one, I think, for another time. We'll save that one. Oh, this is a good one. Oh, and by the way, the sex addict was from AskMen.com, which is one of my favorite sites. I think they have such good information. They're so interesting. They have a lot of good material. Definitely check out that site if you get a chance, AskMen.com. So here's something interesting from a CBS News section called Health Pop. Why do women fake orgasms? A study suggests a surprising answer. So I pose this question to you, Adrian. Why do you think women fake orgasms? You think women fake orgasms because men don't have self-esteem?
Yeah, because they don't want to put up with the guy crying in their arms all night. I'm so sorry. This never happens to me. It's my first time.
Todd, how about you? Why do you think women fake orgasms?
Because men suck.
Oh, okay. Well, the answer may surprise you. This study suggests that this writer is talking about is to keep a man faithful. They fake orgasms so that their man doesn't cheat, as if they legitimately didn't have an orgasm and they were honest about it, that that happened too frequently that their man would want to leave.
Well, it kind of makes him face the fact that he sucks.
Well, that's not necessarily true, because some women are... Every woman is different. No, seriously, this might make you feel better. All women are different, A. B, just because a woman doesn't have an orgasm doesn't mean the sex isn't good. That's not what that means. I'm telling you that to be true. I'm telling you the truthful... That is true.
I believe you.
Okay, good. But I thought that was really interesting, because pretending that they're orgasming is kind of part, they're saying part of the broader strategy of mate retention. So that might be one of the ways. So they can have, there are other things that they might do in addition to faking an orgasm, you know, that to help retain their mate. So that would be one of the multiple things. I'm trying to look and see.
Like cook dinner?
Like cook dinner. Very nice. Is that what your partner does for you, Adrian?
I hope so.
To retain you?
He or she.
We're questioning if it's he or she, huh? So, okay. I can't really find any. They're not really giving any other reasons why she would fake an orgasm. So we'll check that out. But see, related to that, Todd, by the way, how many more minutes do we have here?
3 minutes.
Oh, three. All right. So we'll save some of this for...
Orgasms.
You do? How do you do that, Adrian?
Usually I will spit on the small of her back and I will grunt.
Her? Oh, now it's a her.
Oh. It's all inclusive.
You'll spit and grunt?
Yeah.
And how close do you actually get to her back so that the saliva retains the heat of purportedly your semen?
It does not really lose anything in the air.
It does. It gets cold. I mean, not that I know that from experience. Anyway, moving right along. So we have... Oh, okay. Two last things. So apparently, and by the way, I'm a huge fan of Sex and the City. I'm definitely going to talk about that as we move forward in erotic rhetoric episodes. I am a Yenta. The prequel is happening. So there will be a Sex and the City prequel. But the most interesting part of this article is the article that I found as a result at the bottom was that there is a Sex and the City XXX pornography. Yes, this time the sex is real and not simulated. And I got to tell you, they really got some good-looking women to portray the stars, the Miranda and the Samantha and the Charlotte. And, I forgot the main character. What the heck's her name? Sarah Jessica Parker.
Horseface.
Horseface. Not nice. Carrie.
I wish someone had dumped some blood on her head.
Oh, apparently Adrian agrees with you, Todd, because he just made a horsey noise and he kind of whipped his hand as if it was a horse head.
It does, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But let me tell you something. Every single time I see her on a talk show, she is so nice that I can't think about her like that. She's such a nice person. She's very warm. She's very genuine. I feel like she definitely sounds like she is a nice person.
So would
person.
You share intimate relations with her?
I would, actually. I would.
Would you be the aggressor or the passive one?
Oh, I'd have to be the aggressor. She's madly in love with Matthew Broderick, I'm sure.
Ew.
Oh, jeez. For the love of Pete. Well, anyway, that is it for Sex in the News tonight. We've run out of time, and I have plenty of articles that we can talk about in the next episode. So that's pretty much it for me, folks. I would like to thank my in-house producer, Adrian Sterling, for... joining me on my Sex in the News segment. I think that would be fun to have you on as a regular.
It depends. I have to look at my outlook.
Your outlook, your sex schedule? Okay. You can get back to me on that. Also, thank you, Todd.
I have a conjugal visit.
Oh, goodness gracious. Thank you also, Todd. You're so much fun. I'm so glad that I can have fun on my show with you because I really enjoy you.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
So I just would like to let everybody know that Lee Love, yours truly, will be a guest on Movies Hate You this week, which is this coming Sunday, which I think is actually Super Bowl Sunday, but check out the archive shortly after that. So either Sunday at 10 p.m. on Jackalope Radio, or you can check out the archive a couple days later. I'll be doing my top 10 films I will finish the list of top 10 films that would benefit from a sex scene. So this is Leah Love wishing you a good night and good sex. We'll be right back.
Take